From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. In nations scattered across the globe, people are rioting, not about political freedom or elections, but about the price of food. The United Nations estimates that world prices for food like rice, sugar, and wheat are 50% higher than they were a year ago. Here in the U.S., food banks are seeing a 20% increase in clients over last year. Worse, they're seeing a drastic decline in food donations. In a few minutes, we'll talk about the crisis with economist Bill Spriggs. He's a professor and chair of the economics department at Howard University. But right now, we have Robert Zacharitz. He's the director of advocacy and government relations for World Vision, a Christian nonprofit aid organization. Robert, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So we're hearing reports of at least two people killed in Somalia as people protested over the cost of food. A few weeks ago, we saw civil unrest in Haiti. And what other countries and regions are experiencing this kind of crisis, and how severe is it?
You're seeing across the globe a short-term crisis. As the prices have gone up, it's putting pressure on people's budgets. And the World Food Program has estimated close to 100 million more people could be driven deeper into poverty. Areas of specific concern, you've mentioned Haiti, you've mentioned Somalia, places like northern Sudan, southern Sudan, Burundi, and Uganda are a couple other places.
Now, when we're talking about what's going on, give me a sense of, in general, what kind of prices there are for food relative to people's incomes, because obviously it's all about what you have versus what you need.
One of the biggest problems is you have a billion people who live on a dollar a day or less, and increasingly that does not go as far. And so people cannot get basic staples. We had a report coming from some of our programs in Afghanistan, people who are living on tea and bread. Because of the increase in prices, they're down to just using tea to live on.
Do you think that there's going to be more violence around these food prices?
When people are hungry, they can become desperate. And so I think you're looking at the appeal that's gone out from the World Food Program for additional $755 million just to keep existing programs going is critical.
What are we really talking about here? Are we talking about a lack of food? Are we talking about poor distribution? What's the cause of this?
There's multiple causes, and I think Bill can speak to that better on the economic causes. But with the increase of food prices, with increase in transportation costs, just difficulty on getting food. You're seeing that in the United States with the pressure on people's budgets to make ends meet. It's even tighter when you're on the brink of poverty. It pushes you into poverty.
Well, let me bring Bill in. Bill Spriggs, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
What do you think are the underlying economic causes of, you know, this food insecurity that's leading to violence?
Well, there are several. Bob mentioned the increased cost of transportation because of higher fuel cost. Then we also have speculation that's going on because of anticipation of increased demand for food. China is growing at a faster rate, and we know that contributes to higher fuel costs, but it also means that people in China are able to eat more and demand more food and demand food that's different than basic staples. They're able to eat more meat, and meat, of course, is not the most efficient way to consume food because you have to feed the animals first. So there are those pressures. There are weather conditions caused by global warming that have hurt some areas that used to be able to produce crops. So there are a number of factors that seem to be taking place that are boosting prices.
When we take a look at this, is there a situation where most of the countries that are highly affected are ones that just can't grow enough food or don't produce enough food and it all has to be imported, or at least a large portion has to be imported?
Well, they're the ones who are most directly affected by this unrest because they are poor. And the food price increase has been quite dramatic. So they don't have leeway for absorbing those increases in food prices. In the U.S., of course, we have a little bit more leeway. And as many people have observed, some of us may be eating too much. So we have a little different situation here in the U.S. The problem we have with our food banks is that as prices increase dramatically, it puts pressure on grocery stores, who often are a major source of contributions to local food banks. The grocery stores have to run more efficiently. And so as they cut costs and try and make sure that they don't have excess supplies, it means they have less to donate. And then individuals have less to donate. And then many food banks try to supplement the contributions they get in terms of canned goods and boxed goods and things that can store for a long period with fresh produce. And so they go on the open market often from donations to purchase eggs, milk, fresh vegetables, fresh fruit. And the prices of those things have been escalating, and it's hard for them to keep up with that demand.
Bob, I remember seeing not too long ago, just right around our office in the Crenshaw area of Los Angeles, a very well-dressed woman going around picking cans out of the garbage. And I figure that she must need the money to eat or to pay for prescriptions. She was of retirement age or past that. What kinds of situations are you seeing domestically?
In the domestic front, you're seeing an increase on the food banks and the soup kitchens. You're also seeing people who are just trying to manage their own household budgets as they're making changes in what they are purchasing. I know the Farm Bill is up before Congress. You're seeing some of the school lunch programs in the United States buying less nutritious food in order to continue to maintain those school lunch programs and on a regular basis.
What do you think is going to be the remedy for the domestic issue? I mean, we certainly here have plenty of food in the U.S. It's just a question of who it goes to. What's the solution?
I think one is, you know, the premier on the Farm Bill, as that's moving forward, which is the premier on our safety programs, on the food stamps, on school lunch and breakfast programs, and child nutrition programs. That's the government side. You're seeing the private sector, a lot of people pitching in through churches or community organizations, supplying those food banks with additional resources.
Bill, how does food bank work tie into the government? Is there government support, local, federal, state, for food bank, feeding programs, et cetera?
Well, yes, there is in many different ways. Part of it comes through the Farm Bill, which unfortunately, because it's been held up, hasn't been able to adjust its authorization level to meet the increased prices of some things. So there are central food banks which get food from the mechanisms of our Farm Bill. In addition to that, of course, there are food stamps. And then at the state and local level, there are some food banks that are assisted by community action agencies that are funded through a federal program, a block grant that goes to community action agencies. So there are myriad ways in which the money ends up coming through the federal government that's also matched at the local level by private donations and by individuals.
Going back to that point that you made about the types of food we eat, and meat being essentially more labor-intensive or just intensive in terms of the amount of calories it takes in grain to produce the meat, do you see consumption patterns changing back to a more vegetarian-based diet, at least for some people?
Well, the big problem we're having now is that some of the food price increase is coming from the increased demand for grains, part of that having to do with biofuel programs. So it isn't so easy for people to switch out of meat. The inflation for grains, in fact, has been quite severe. It's been quite severe for milk and dairy products and for eggs. So there's a big challenge for the folks who would say, well, I'd like to save the rest of the world and not eat meat because their prices of those goods have been going up.
Bob, when it comes to your organization, World Vision, how are you strategically looking at what you can do and what you can't do in this time?
We're trying to really look at both dealing with a short-term crisis and beginning to scale up programs that deal with long-term solutions. Some of these items are not going away anytime soon. And I think you can go about both. Many times the answer involves community organizations, both a response to the private sector and the public sector. So we're looking at resources, scaling up both the public and private side. We're looking at sustainable programs and to sustainable agricultural development, microcredit access to resources to begin that. And people can learn more at World Vision's website of what we're doing at www.worldvision.org for some of our longer term plans.
How long do you think it'll take? I mean, there's been a Nobel Prize awarded for microcredit work, and there have been a lot of things that have proven to work in the long term. But how far is the long term when people are hungry today?
That's it. I mean, the World Food Program's appeal is immediate now to keep people who are on the on programs continuing on those programs. We've been doing some of the long-term sustainable programs. There's a need to look at that, including the upcoming meeting of all the G8 leaders that's taking place in Japan, to look at what are some of the structural impediments for investing in sustainable agriculture for people in the developing world. They have access to credit, access to markets, access to inputs like fertilizer to help them feed their families and then produce extra to bring it to market.
Bill, how is this affecting children through things like school lunches?
Well, it's affecting children in the U.S. greatly. One of the big problems that we have in the U.S. is that wages in general have not been keeping up with inflation in general. We are going into the current recession with incomes actually lower than at the start of the recovery. So we went through a 7-year recovery and incomes, in fact, in the middle fell relative to prices. And people who are in the bottom 20% saw both their incomes fall, and because they can't borrow money, they aren't part of the debt crisis we're seeing, their consumption actually fell. And we know among poor families, the first thing they cut is food, because you still have to have shelter and you still have to pay the electric bill. And so those bills get paid up front and people cheat on food. So it affects children greatly. And in the U.S., unfortunately, a large share of those who are poor are children. So we have the effect of the school lunch program, which is being squeezed because of these and price changes that aren't being adjusted as quickly as we can with appropriations to account for the inflation. And then we have the problem of the WIC program being held up by the farm bill that we can't make the adjustments we need, and the food stamp program. And there's a big gap between Americans who are eligible for food stamps Bill. And Americans who get it.
All right. Well, Bill and Bob, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Bill Spriggs is the chair of the Department of Economics at Howard University, and Robert Zachritz is the director of advocacy and government relations for World Vision. They both joined us from NPR headquarters studios in Washington, D.C. And just ahead, it could have ruined both of their careers, but now Barbara Walters is telling all about an affair with former Senator Edward Brooke, the first black senator since Reconstruction. That's on Bloggers Roundtable.